Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life. And welcome back to Idle Red Hands. I'm Chris.
I'm Wayne.
I'm Lav.
And I'm Christos.
Yes.
Christos is back.
Yeah. Nice to see you, Christos.
Yeah,
For a non-board game episode.
I'm going to be way out of my depth on this one.
Moving up in the world. Or sideways.
It's a lateral move. I watched Push.
Oh,
cool. Just to show how current and topical this podcast is. I watched a movie from... it's only 2 years old.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah. I was thinking, I saw it maybe about a year ago.
Because it's got that Dakota Fanning in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, wow, she still looks pretty young. But I thought she was almost 18 now. Nah, she was like 13 or 14. So.
Yeah.
So she aged about 5 years and 2 years ago.
I don't know, but then they filmed earlier. You know, I don't want to explain movie making to you right now. I did enjoy it. Cool. Has Chris Evans. I think he's usually decent in his movies.
Yeah.
And I had Neil Jackson, who, although I don't want to mention the Game of Thrones, I thought would be great for Jaime Lannister.
Yeah, I thought it was alright. I didn't like the ending very much. I thought it was a bit kind of meh. But
and Cliff Curtis. He's a New Zealand actor. He was in Once Were Warriors.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times he's cast, he's Maori, so a lot of times they cast him as Arab characters, mm-hmm, or Latino characters. He's in Training Day. You like that, Chris. Mm-hmm. That great scene with Ethan Hawke, and he's got those gangsters, those Latino gangsters, and they're playing cards.
Yeah.
And he's the head guy. It's his sister or cousin or whatever.
Okay.
That he saved.
Is this also the guy who now plays every stormtrooper in the Star Wars series?
No, but he's from the Once Were Warriors, mm-hmm, too. That's, mm-hmm, Jake the Mus. I forget. Something Morrison maybe is his name?
The last two podcasts I've been on, I have made a mistake about people's names. The first one was about Michael Cera or Sarah, and the next one was about the name of the guy who made Space Alert and Galaxy Trucker. So I'm not commenting on anyone's name.
Just that guy.
Uh-huh. The Stormtrooper guy.
I like that guy, yeah.
But maybe you've now become that guy for us. You know? Hey, it's that guy that makes the mistakes all the names. You mean Lyle? No, Chris. No, I enjoyed it. So basically psychics, or people with psionics powers.
Mm-hmm.
I thought they did a good job of quickly setting up what the world is with these people.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then that was an interesting story.
This is the one which is the hero's clone, right? Some of the characters have telekinetic powers. Some of them can read minds.
Well, I don't think heroes came up with that.
Yeah, but at the height of heroes' popularity, I think this movie came out, and I, at the time I thought, oh, this is very heroes.
It's not really that similar to heroes. There's, instead of having like one person with a specific power, there's kind of different groups of power people.
Yeah,
it's not really that similar, I think. But there's some really good scenes in it. The gunfight scene in the restaurant with the two guys with telekinesis and they're hovering guns around shooting at each other.
That was really good.
Cool. The opening scene with the marble. They have like a marble, I don't know if it's controlled or something.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Rolls through a whole hospital. It's a really good scene.
I liked it when Neil Jackson was holding off all those Chinese government guys.
Yeah, that's cool.
That was really cool.
So, yeah, it's got some good scenes.
Yeah, I would recommend it for people that like, you know, like superhero movies or...
I think it's really similar to Jumper.
In that case, I would watch it.
That's not a good endorsement for me.
Yeah, yeah.
If you enjoy Jumper, then you'd probably enjoy this as well.
And if you didn't enjoy Jumper and thought it was crap, you might watch Push.
Yeah, you might still enjoy Push. Yeah.
Maybe. I mean,
in that case, I'll risk it. I was all set until I heard, and if you like Jumper, I'm like, oh, never mind. Cross that off my list.
I think a lot more can be done with the people with superpowers genre than has been thus far. I'm not talking about superhero movies, although I actually do feel the same thing about them, but just people with strange powers and the way it can affect society. I think you could make some really good stories with that.
Mm-hmm.
Like a world where a certain number of people have superpowers of some kind.
Did you like Heroes then?
First season was fantastic. Second and third seasons were so terrible.
I stopped watching as soon as they brought Siler back to life. Not again.
What's the point?
Yeah,
what's the point?
I could never get into that series, even though I like comics and superheroes and that, I just, nothing really grabbed grabbed a hold of me in that whole thing. And I like Adrian Pastar.
Yeah.
Like he's in one of my favorite movies, Near Dark. That's Caleb.
Yeah,
and he was in that TV series Prophet. But yeah, I don't know. It had all these elements, and you're just like, it can't suck me in.
I liked how at the start everyone had their own separate story, but as it went on, it found all these hidden relationships and connections between everyone, and it all became very interconnected. And
maybe it was like also then when you're watching, you know, what's the guy, the Japanese guy,
Masioka,
and well, that's his real name.
Hiro is his name.
Hiro. Yeah. Oh, that's funny. But all the scenes in Japan clearly weren't Japan.
Yeah.
They were clearly like LA with Koreans everywhere. And just like, even his friend is Korean, but he's Japanese.
Yeah.
My wife, it was the first time she watched the scene with Ando-kun. She's like, yeah, that guy's not Japanese. But actually, have you heard him speaking English?
Which one?
Ando.
The Korean guy.
Korean guy.
Yeah.
He's American, right?
Right.
He has a very broad American
accent. Is he American? Sorry, I don't know. I've never heard him speak English.
Yeah.
Wait, I thought he was Korean.
Maybe ethnic Korean, but...
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Korean-American, maybe? Okay. Like,
you can be both.
Like the people from Lost. The two actors from Lost. Sure. I think they're both Korean-American.
I think, yeah. Okay. I know, yeah. One of them, the guy, had to learn Korean from the lady, right?
I thought the lady actually is Korean.
Oh, she's Korean. Yeah.
Yeah, she might be Korean. Well, anyway, she could speak Korean already, and Daniel Kim couldn't speak Korean at all.
I don't know if Grace Park can, but she's Korean Canadian. And then they're both now on Hawaii 5-0.
Yeah.
Brother and sister. Yeah. Amazing. Yeah. Anyway.
But yeah, main point. Heroes not so good with the Japanese accents.
or Japanese scenes.
Yeah. But Push was also one of those movies where the villains are almost more engaging than the heroes. Like I was saying, the Neil Jackson character, he's a bad guy.
Yeah.
But you're like, yeah, that's right. You show those government guys. You just kick some ass. And actually, when he was fighting Chris Evans, I would have been happy if he beat Chris Evans. Even though I like the Chris Evans character, but because they made the Neil Jackson character so badass and just so cool that you're just like, yeah, there's no way Chris Evans is going to be able to take this guy on. Go.
I read an interesting article by Peter David, famous comic book writer. Yeah.
Incredible Hulk, X-Factor.
Uh-huh. And an essay about the villain.
Yeah.
He said that in stories of long, long ago, the hero would be the proactive guy who goes out on a mission, goes out on a quest to get something done. He had a goal, and the villain would try to stop him. But in modern comic books, there's a role reversal now. Usually the villain wants to do something.
Take over the world.
Exactly. taking over the world being the most popular one. Stealing the money or what have you. And the hero is the reactionary guy who just tries to stop whatever the villain's doing, making a case for villains being perhaps more interesting than heroes.
Oh, that's kind of interesting. I've found in most books that I've read that the evil characters or the villains are usually more engaging than the heroes.
Absolutely.
Or even in like other games, like video games or tabletop war games, usually the evil factions are more interesting or more characterful than the quote-unquote good factions. So
I'll disagree about the factions, but yeah, right. I guess in a lot of
maybe
stories,
just a preference,
a lot of times now, yeah, the hero now is a defender of the status quo.
Yeah.
And maybe in different times, the hero becomes, you know, the revolutionary. But now maybe we're just all about keeping things the way they are now. Don't rock the boat. So
don't steal the money. Don't take over the world.
Don't steal the money. Yeah, don't take over the world. The world's fine as it is.
I don't see it as maybe just being an evolution of literature. You know, if you have both a hero who's very engaging and a bad guy who's also engaging, then it can make just for a richer story instead of having just one side be more interesting and the other side being a bland obstacle.
Right.
But not necessarily so.
Well, I guess before we get into debate, debate that, perhaps we should...
debate that!
Yeah. I don't know, perhaps we should bring up that today's episode is villains.
About villains, what, yeah.
Surprise!
So we broke that confusion. That is it going to be heroes? Is it going to be villains? It's going to be villains. So today we're going to have a kind of a checklist of questions that storytellers, game masters should ask themselves when they're making a villain to make them as engaging as hopefully the players are making their heroes. All right. Sorry, did you want to finish your debate there, Wayne?
No, that's fine.
I'll throw it down.
What are we going to debate?
I was going to, maybe it's personal preference. I was going to say, generally I find that the heroes aren't really that engaging.
Okay.
In modern literature.
In modern literature, yeah. As I said, I find that the bad guys usually more interesting.
Okay. Yeah,
but that could just be personal preference.
Luke Skywalker anyway. Versus Darth Vader.
Han Solo versus the Emperor.
Yeah.
That wouldn't be much of a fight.
There you go. Solo is
this hero. Debate just going to consist of Star Wars characters?
Probably.
Well, that's what all of our debates consist of, so why not?
Han Solo is a hero. He's a the hero.
Wookiees versus Jawa.
Oh, and now we're going to like split between, I find the heroes more engaging than the heroes.
Yeah, sure.
Hello, listeners. You're still with us. You're still with us.
So, all right, so.
They're not.
The checklist. You came up with the checklist, Lyle, so.
It's like, not the topic itself, villains. Chris came up with the topic, but, yeah, then we were trying to wrestle with, like, okay, villains is such a broad topic, as you can see, you know, even hero between a hero and the hero, which will be a later episode, I'm sure.
Articles.
how to tackle the topic. So, we kind of hit upon, let's do making villains. But not actually just make a villain and watch the magic happen, but basically the kind of questions that we would ask ourselves when we're making our villains to try to make them as interesting and engaging as possible. As a proper foil, if you will, to our players.
Hopefully you'll find the checklist useful when you're building your own villain.
Right. Even if you didn't find a big long talk about push useful. First question is, who and what is your villain? For example, is your villain going to be the mirror image of the hero or the exact opposite of the hero?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question because, you know, like in traditional literature, the villain is supposed to be cast as an opposite to the hero, like their personality and traits and everything. But that might be hard to do in a role-playing game where you have a group of heroes rather than just a single guy. Might, in fact, even be impossible.
Well, I mean, you could take...
Right, so then should you... So one of the questions could be, when you're making it, when you're considering who and what is your villain, should you then just make your villain separately, as a separate entity, without even consideration of what the players are doing and what they're creating? Or do you create it as kind of like a counter to the party?
It's also a good question.
These are just things that you need to consider when you make the villain.
I would say yes, but I want to split hairs on the player versus character there, because if you're planning your adventure beforehand, you probably don't know what the characters are or what they're going to be. So you have to base it off of what your players enjoy, what kind of a game they want to run.
Well, you could also base it on what kind of story you're running. Right, because if you know beforehand what kind of story you're running, you generally know what kind of characters you'll have, right? Even if you don't know what they are, which means you could find an appropriate villain to kind of, again, fit the story and fit the characters. Going back to, is it a mirror image or the opposite of the party? Once the characters are made, you can kind of look at the strengths and weaknesses of the party as a whole, and then say, okay, well, they're sort of deficient in this area. That means if I make a villain who is proficient in this area, that'll cause them some problems or be a challenge.
Yeah.
It would get pretty difficult if it's like a well-balanced party, and so there aren't any sort of gaps you can exploit. But then I would just go with something that maybe you think would be fun or you think would challenge the players or fit in your story better.
I mean, yeah, there's advantages and disadvantages to either approach. On the one hand, if you make it as a separate entity, then you're going to be building it on whatever your story is. Mm-hmm. So then I think it'll become, I don't know, a more realized or more fully realized villain. Whereas if you make it as a counter, I mean, then you can...
It might not be as detailed, but it also might have the advantage of it being tailor-made for the
players. It's tailor-made, and then even though it's a counter, then you probably have ideally have built in that this person can be defeated. Mm-hmm. So
either way, you're kind of setting yourself up, not for
because if you make it just connected to the story, you could conceivably make a villain that the players have no answer for. Or you made a villain that the players have a very easy answer for him and beat him quickly.
Yeah, I kind of saw it like if you build your villain to fit the story,
yeah.
You might have to like hammer the players into the space to fit, right? Because in other words, there might not be any connections between the characters and the villain if you kind of make them separately. Right? If you kind of only focus on the story, your players may make characters who really wouldn't get that involved. So in other words, you'll have to like maybe force connections between the villain and the players. And if you do it the other way, well then maybe the villain who's tailor-made to fit the characters might not fit the story that well, and then you're going to have to like bend the story around to sort of hold the villain. So
I guess either way needs some work, right?
Yeah. Very nicely summed up, Chris.
It's hard. And no, actually, comparing it with what you said earlier about the heroes being reactionary versus proactive, that could make a pretty big difference towards the story as well. Because if you're thinking, if you created the villain beforehand, he probably has some kind of evil plot or he's doing something bad that the players have to go out and stop.
Right.
It's reactionary. Whereas kind of like a more traditional game would be where it's a group of guys in a tavern, they go to a dungeon and you put the dragon there because that's what's at the bottom of the dungeon.
And I think that goes into the second major thing that the storyteller needs to consider when making a villain is like why is your villain and why are your heroes? Why are they against each other?
Mm-hmm. Because the villain is evil
and the heroes are good.
Yeah. Right, and that'll be crushingly boring. And yeah, is it because? Like, are they somehow, you know, I mean, it gets into a lot of things. Do they have some sort of personal animosity against each other? Mm-hmm. Their personal animosity.
Revenge story.
Yeah, it could be a revenge story. Did they kill them? You know, did the heroes kill the villain's family?
Did they kill them? Well, then it's story over.
Nah, could be revenge. Or is it the fact that the villain has this elaborate plan? So if you look at, X-Men First Class is coming out this month. Mm-hmm. Actually, it's already out in North America, I think. But why is Magneto and the X-Men, why are they in conflict? And it's not so much that, there's some personal history there, but mostly it's because he wants to have the mutants rule the world, and they are against that, despite being mutants. So basically we're looking at the reactionary heroes versus the proactive villain.
Hmm. I guess another question is, how sympathetic do you want your villain to be to? Say, from an action movie standpoint, you pretty much want your villain to be as despicable as possible. So
twirl his mustache.
So the audience is going to get a lot of satisfaction out of the hero totally knocking his head off at the end of the show. Mm-hmm. Whereas, if you want a bit more...
Some classic things are, you know, when the villain just randomly shoots one of his henchmen.
Yeah.
Just to build up, you know.
Man, that guy's... No, I forget where I read it or where I heard it, Christos, but one of the things about the unsympathetic villain is sort of, you know, the heroes are supposed to be good generally, and, you know, kind of at the end of a story where the hero has, you know, the villain down on the floor, usually the hero gives him a chance to, like, repent or ships him off to jail or whatever, and the villain always has to go for that one last, oh, I yield, and then I'm going to try and kill you, giving the hero the chance to kill the villain in self-defense so that the hero is still this kind of good, likable character, and the villain is utterly despicable, which is, in my opinion, horribly cliched now, but whatever.
Yeah, so basically, always keeping the hero squeaky clean. And,
Yeah, it's interesting. You don't seem to have that problem very often in role-playing games. It's a bad guy! Kill him!
One thing you lose is the monologue, eh? It's like, what happened to the monologue?
You know, actually, I was reading a really interesting article about that the other day, about the villainous monologue. And it was saying that villains really should monologue. and you look at him there, if he's like the master of this evil organization. He thinks he's the smartest guy around. He may actually be the smartest guy around, and he's surrounded by inferiors. And when somebody finally fights their way up to him, he's almost their intellectual equal. Of course he would want to say it. He's been suffering for years without being able to tell his despicable plans.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, finally, someone I can share with.
You guys suck for that at the end of the D&D game, where you snuck up on the villain in the bag and just started attacking him.
Excuse me, I had a monologue planned.
I remember you said, oh, come on, we're going to do this, so you're forgiven, but...
No, I had a monologue planned. You ended on a cliffhanger before an action scene, so I had a monologue planned, and then it was like, and it was like, roll initiative, attack. I was like, where's my monologue?
Yeah, I hear you, man.
I was going to, like... talk to people and try to get something.
I had one too.
You were though when Chris said roll initiative, you were supposed to deliver your monologue in 6 seconds. Okay, turn one. What do you say? Go. 6 seconds done.
All right. But anyway, yeah, no.
Yeah, there's some advice for your villains. Don't let the players take away the monologue.
Well, advice for the DM: don't say roll initiative and then expect players to monologue afterwards.
I didn't make you attack him.
Right. Yeah, no, I think it's definitely a place for making a complex or sympathetic villain. I would see those as slightly different.
What do you mean by complex?
A complex villain would be someone... you don't really know if they're a villain.
Mm-hmm.
Some examples I would say are if you look at, well, we're big fans of Game of Thrones and that whole series, but a Jaime Lannister.
Mm-hmm.
Is a complex villain.
Sure.
Because is he a bad guy? You know, you like.
How about Varys?
Varys?
Varys is just like an obscure character. You just don't really know what his motivations are so much.
Oh yeah, but
I wouldn't say he's a villain at all.
Okay, fair enough.
I mean, he could be like. I mean, if they make him a villain, you'd be like, what? You know. But
he's secretive.
But the thing is, like, somebody like Magneto would be a sympathetic villain in that they. They clearly want to do bad things, like enslave humans and that. But then you're like, oh, but, you know, because he's a survivor of the Holocaust. Oh, you know, I'm kind of sympathetic to that. Okay. But a complex villain is someone you're like, I'm not really sure I'm supposed to... I don't like this guy, but I like him. I don't know. Like, you don't sympathize. There's nothing about Jaime Lannister where you sympathize with how he is.
Yeah.
But you don't... You might be a little conflicted about
how you feel about him. There Will Be Blood.
Yes.
There Will Be Blood. I think Daniel Day-Lewis's character in that is pretty complex too.
I thought that movie just kind of meandered. I think that movie
that
masqueraded.
That was the complexity.
No, the complexity is it was all a sham. It masqueraded as a movie.
Yeah,
and then you're like, oh, is this it?
Setting aside your opinion about the movie in general, focusing on the character, I thought he's the main character. But he's a pretty despicable guy. Like he beats people to death, and he's pretty mean to his son.
So who's the hero in that?
Well, he's the main character. Like,
so I guess this could raise a larger question: can you have a villain if you don't have a hero? Because then you're just the protagonist, in that you're just literally moving the story forward. And actually, I could even argue in that movie there was no protagonist because that story did not move forward.
Well, depending on.
It just kind of
but he, like, you could say
took
he's,
up three
he's,
hours of your time.
Well, I love the movie, but anyway, I consider him a protagonist in that story. Like,
okay, no, it's fine, but he's not a villain. He's unless the story is about the villain.
He's,
which is a valid story too. I've heard of There Will Be Blood described as a monster movie, like in the same grain as Godzilla. Yeah, of course, it didn't have a giant monster, but he kind of characterized that same role in something like that. Who's the protagonist of society? The world, the movie is about the villain, the bad guy.
Yeah. They also go into the motivations of the character, like, not Godzilla. They Will Be Blood. You know, they talk about his family, his old family life, and then this guy shows up being his brother, but then it's not really his brother, and he's all conflicted about that. So I thought he was a pretty complex character too.
I thought that movie pretended to be complex. I didn't think he was complex at all. I didn't think there was anything about that movie that's complex. It was just long.
Anton, there might be a third class of villain as well, the simple villain, which is just kind of wanton destruction. Doesn't really deserve much topic.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
To talk about, but, yeah.
No, and that could be just it. I mean, if you're talking about a Godzilla,
mm-hmm.
And I know some people maybe want to, like, exaggerate Godzilla as, like, oh, it's actually sympathetic, or, you know, it's a metaphor for this, therefore it's complex. But it's actually just an engine of destruction.
Yeah.
That is going through, and that's kind of the villain. And you could have, yeah, you could have a very human, but very simplistic villain where you just want to make it that it's an engine of destruction. So therefore, why are the villain and the heroes at odds? Is because
somebody's got to stop.
Yeah, somebody's got to stop the engine of destruction.
Yeah.
If you want there to be something extra when they're stopping the villain, or if maybe you want the party to kind of debate why they're going against the villain, then yeah, make the villain complex or even sympathetic, where what they're doing is, you could even have the case where the heroes side with the villain and it kind of swaps because there's another villain.
Yeah.
Because we found out this person's motivation. And that as a sub question to this, is it important for you, or is it important for your villain and story for the heroes to find out and discover why that they're really at fighting against the villain?
Yes. For the sake of your own sanity as a game master, yes, it is.
Because
it just sucks otherwise to make up this big plan and then not have it be revealed in the end.
Just to use the Godzilla example again, is, you know, Godzilla's a walking engine destruction, and all they really need to do is stop Godzilla.
Mm-hmm.
Do they really need to discover it? It was all this nuclear testing that woke him up, or maybe even some radiation. He's like, oh wow, there's a real message here about nuclear war atomic power. So maybe our next adventure there is to stop the... Oh, if only, eh? They could have stopped TEPCO before Fukushima. Yeah. All right, no, definitely, Chris, you're right.
No, I was going to say no. You don't have to, because if you look at a movie like Cloverfield...
King Kong. Oh, I think we're on the same page.
Cloverfield, right? Like, you don't know why that alien came down, right? You don't know what
it is. We don't even know it's an alien.
You don't even know it's an alien. You don't know what it is. Or,
that's a good movie.
You don't even see it.
Yeah. Well, you don't see it in its entirety. Or, like, we had talked before about, like, the Cthulhu gods or Cthulhu mythos.
Yeah.
Like, nobody can understand why they're doing what they're doing. Not even them. They might not have a reason.
Well, one of the classic stories in that genre as well is Birds by Alfred Hitchcock.
Yeah. There's no explanation
why they start attacking.
So, you don't need to know. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You don't need to know. However, I will sort of say that if your players kind of start to wander, like, they could get frustrated with not knowing, right? If they don't know the reason why things are happening, depending on what kind of story you're telling or what kind of game.
Can I clarify?
Yeah.
And I'm agreeing with you 100%. It's just, yeah, the reason why maybe the monster appeared is, it's, we're making a distinction between that, why it's attacking, versus discovering how to stop it. Mm-hmm. There is a distinction there.
Yeah.
So it's like, why are all the birds suddenly attacking? Yeah, if there's a reason to, you know, oh, let's just kill all the birds, and that's the solution to the problem, great. Yeah, maybe that actually might be really interesting. Is what was the reason? I don't know. And maybe you might choose to revisit that a few adventures later, or a few stories later, and something else happens, and it is, you somehow link it. But I don't think you always need for the players to discover why the villain was opposing them.
If you're doing a simplistic villain like that, we're talking about...
But a simple villain does not necessarily mean a simple story.
This is true.
Because, absolutely, like the birds, absolutely, or like Cloverfield, that those could be like a really...
But those aren't the man versus man kind of story. That's like a man versus a force of nature.
What about Mike Myers in Halloween? Why does he kill?
Because he's crazy.
That's the same thing. The birds.
Exactly. Yeah, no, he is an engine of destruction. He's a man.
That's my point. Is he a complicated villain? Is he a sympathetic villain?
No.
Exactly. It'd be very difficult to tell a story with.
No, but you were saying man versus man. So I'm saying there's an example of a simple villain that's a man.
I don't think he really represents a man versus man, because he's not a man. He's a killing machine.
Yeah, it's the same basic thing.
But they show him. If you watch, I mean, let's, if we just focus on the first movie. Okay, all right.
Okay, how about this? Imagine, like, you do a session where there's a guy with an army, and he just has his army attacking your party all the time. Do you need to know that guy's motivation or not? Maybe that's what...
I think that's what I was saying. Right?
Exactly, and that depends.
Can you go through the whole game without ever knowing why he's having his army attack you, and just at the end you kill the guy, and that's it? Or
I think there can be a case where they don't give you an answer. Like maybe you do have the monologue, and the players are expecting the monologue because maybe your past three villains just monologue the hell out of the finale, and that was really great, and the players really loved that. And then I was like, why were you attacking it? And he just shrugs and dies. Something like that. And then the players are like, I think that, like,
what the hell was that?
Exactly. And that might be perfect. Just a perfect finish, because then there is that level of frustration, mm-hmm. but they're like, what's going on? And then maybe something could spin off on that. But so,
as a spin off,
but it also makes it unpredictable
as an actual ending. I don't know.
I'm going to argue, like, sometimes you watch a movie and you want that closure. And then sometimes it has an ambiguous ending, mm-hmm. and you're like, what's going on?
Yeah.
Like, and I think in a game, just like those movies.
1,000 people make threads about Inception Online.
Oh, there you go. And then they're talking about.
That one clearly had an ending. But.
No, I think I agree. But if you wanted to create a villain who's complex or sympathetic, I don't think it's possible to make that kind of villain without giving some kind of explanation or story behind them, especially the sympathetic one. You have to have a reason for him to be sympathetic.
I think you could okay, have the players discover it as they went along.
Okay, that's a good discussion. But just another point that maybe is getting lost about that question. Do the heroes have to discover it? Which means that maybe you have the motivation, right? But are you going to, if the player, it's not naturally leading to the point where they're going to discover the motivation. They're basically going to see this villain, kill him from a distance. You know, like, they've set up like a sniper rifle scenario. Are you going to have the villain appear on the rooftop and it's like, oh, sniper rifle, well, that won't work with me because blah, 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 blah. You know, Holocaust. beaten as a child. Then I don't think you should have to force that in.
No,
if the players have basically said, I don't care. I hate this guy.
And actually,
I don't care why he or she is throwing army after army.
And
I just want him dead. And then you're like, all right.
That was the end of the D&D campaign. Oh, there he is. Let's kill him. That's it.
Right. Okay, so.
There's a place for both.
There's a place for both for all of them.
Calm down, guys. Calm down.
Another question you should ask yourself when you're making your villain. Will all the obstacles in the story be related to the villain?
I'm going to say no, kind of for the same reason.
It's like, when you consider that.
I don't want your opinion either.
Man, yeah.
It's not an opinion.
I'm just kidding.
It's just like, there's no definitive answer.
The answer is no.
And you say you run sandbox games.
Yeah, yeah.
Actually, though, I do have a tendency to agree with Wayne on that. A story that's... Well, actually, no, now that I'm saying,
I think it, in I a movie, sometimes people do, you know, say, why was this thrown in? This had nothing to do with the story.
Yeah.
This subplot went nowhere. Mm-hmm. But I think in a game, and sometimes people forget, there's a lot of things in movies that work that you just can't pour it over to a game,
right.
And vice versa. And it's, you don't necessarily have to have every part or every encounter that the players meet. I wanted to say encounter.
Yeah. Every obstacle the players encounter.
Thank you. Has to be related. Perhaps you could do that. I remember one adventure that I had. The players actually fought some orcs, and the orcs had nothing to do with the main bad guy, who is this necromancer, crazy guy. The point was they fight these orcs and they kill them, and then they find out they're all like mostly women and children. And they really didn't have to kill off these orcs. Mm-hmm. They just kind of used their, it was kind of an impression as appearances can be deceiving, which was related to the story.
Yeah.
But it was not related to the villain. The villain had nothing to do with these orcs.
And those guys were the heroes? Ouch.
I slaughtered them like animals.
They saw him from a distance and started to attack them, so the orcs defended themselves.
It's been a while since we had a Star Wars reference. Yeah.
Anyway, I agree with you, La, because I'm usually the one who at the end of a movie says, well, why the hell did they have that? It had nothing to do with the plot, or that didn't connect.
Yeah, you do say that a lot.
Yeah, because I think, like, in a movie, yeah, you're right, you kind of have to tell a rather compact story. So unless a subplot kind of goes somewhere or connects to the main plot, I think it's sometimes a waste, unless it sometimes the main point could just be to show character development, which would be fine.
Right.
But like in the game, you have the you can kind of wander around.
Well,
a
the game
bit
the and, time spans are different. A movie is only 2 hours long.
Well, yeah,
3 hours if it's if there will be blood. But in a game, you could be 2-3 years.
Well, yeah, exactly right. Longer.
And like even just thinking like just a little microcosm, you walk into a room. And in a movie, you see a TV, you see a desk, you see stuff on the desk, you see a couch, and all this stuff. It's just because it's a room that happens to have furniture. Mm-hmm. But when people walk into a room and you go, and there's a desk with some papers on it, it's,
search the desk.
Search the desk. Yeah, what does the paper say? And you're like, it's a grocery list. Okay, sorry.
What's on there?
What's on the grocery list?
I'm going to use my deciphering to figure out this code.
Because players are too quick to connect everything that they've encountered to the main plot,
right.
When sometimes you just have window dressing or just stuff to create the environment. Mm-hmm. And the same is like, if every obstacle is somehow, you know, you meet some gangsters on the corner and they beat them up and then they're like searching the body and checking all the tattoos and doing rubbings.
All on the tattoos?
I don't know.
What are you doing there, Johnson?
Sometimes they're just like not, you know, sometimes a gangster is just a gangster.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes a hobgoblin, just a hobgoblin.
Yeah, thank you. Extra clarification at that point. I think it adds a bit of extra realism to...
Yeah. Is a bear always just a bear? Sorry, go on, Chris.
Well, that needed to be outside. I finished.
Oh, okay.
Are you finished?
Like, it can be great, like you're peeling layers of the onion. So you're going through to get to the villain, but that can be quite multidimensional and that. Or it could seem like it's a video game where you're just beating guys to get to the boss.
It could get tedious, too, if you don't have any distractions on the side as well.
Yeah.
And plus, as part of, again, in a movie, you usually have the main character. It's about that person. Mm-hmm. Whereas in a game, you probably have a group of people who it's about, and you can't focus on only one person's story.
Yep. So, if you have your players like fall into a, like say, quicksand, well, and like they have to like fight to get out of it. You really have to say that was caused by the evil wizard sitting in his tower.
You fell into my quicksand.
I'd actually like to see a villain like that who just takes credit for all that stuff too. Ah, yes,
that was me.
I knocked that tree down.
Did you encounter the sharks in the quicksand? Yeah, they always seem to die when they're in there. One day soon. But that gets into. Actually, what we're talking about gets into the next question you should ask yourself.
Sharks and quicksand.
Should you put sharks in quicksand? And again, my answer, no.
I think we can all get on board on that answer. But
they
how...
use them to climb out of quicksand.
Yeah, the skeletons.
Yeah, how'd you climb out? Shark carcass.
Quick, throw some more sharks in.
You're bobbing there and melt and surface it around.
Sure. Did they float? I don't know. the next question to ask yourself is, how can the heroes beat the villain? And do they even need to face the villain to kind of finish the story?
Traditionally, I would say yes, that they do. I mean, that kind of provides a closure. I'm sorry, you weren't done with the question?
No, I was just saying, it's not, I think, these aren't yes or no questions, but yeah.
Okay, my answer then is maybe.
So usually in your stories, you think, yes, they should have to.
I would say in traditional stories, then the kind of closure that you get, that's the ending of the story, that is comes with the facing of the villain, or at least the facing of the conflict at large.
That's humoristic.
You disagree?
Nah, I just... Yeah, no, I just laughed.
Apparently for no reason. Much like the obstacles in an adventure don't always have to be connected to the villain.
No, when you said facing the villain, and they just have to like look in his direction.
That was funny. Anyway,
that's why I didn't want to go into it. I was like, yeah, just move on.
I'm going to trust your instincts next time.
I picked that scar. So to provide the closure that has a good feeling ending, then yes, the heroes should... face a villain. However, if you want to go with that more unclear kind of ending, maybe even the frustrating ending like you mentioned before, Lyle, then absolutely you could have it being an unresolved ending where they never end up facing the villain. Or they don't get to.
But it could also be the thing where there's no point. You could actually, like, you know, break that. Like, let's say you have a mob boss, and you've worked it in. You have very social characters, social player characters, and they never directly face down or encounter the mob boss, but they just completely destroy his criminal empire.
I would say that's almost the same thing, in that they're facing the antagonist being the criminal organization,
which is fine. I mean, but if that's what you've built into your story, that's just something to consider. Because if you have a case where you've said definitely yes, they need to face down the villain, then you've got to make your villain strong enough to be able to take on the party,
right?
Either only them or with their kind of core henchmen, mm-hmm. their inner circle. Mm-hmm. But if you've decided, no, they don't need to face down the villain to win, then you don't need to make this, like, uber boss,
right?
Kind of a video game-esque, what do you call those?
Boss.
The boss at the end?
End boss. Final boss.
End boss. All right. Yeah, sorry.
What do you call that boss?
I think I just lost my video game credit.
Yeah. You know, the boss at the end of the level.
No. The end boss. What do you call him? But yeah, like, if you imagine a video game and you're playing a video game and it's, you know, it's ratcheting up, mm-hmm. being all his henchmen, and then you feed the end boss and it's like an old man in a wheelchair, and you just, like, knock over his wheelchair and kick him for, like, a couple minutes until his life meter goes down, might not be very unrewarding.
And here is our leader, a child with
but
a cancer.
If you've decided, like, no, you don't necessarily need to face him down, or if you do, it doesn't need to be a physical encounter. You could just go there and, I suppose, gloat.
Mm-hmm.
And says, you're
not a very good hero then.
Well, there you go. You have complex heroes. Not sympathetic, but complex.
I think it kind of depends.
No, but I think just whatever your answer to the question is, do they need to face down the hero, is going to impact what kind of villain you make.
Right? Yeah.
Because if you're, I know you love to bring up Superman, despite your hatred of Superman, Chris. But if you've got Lex Luthor, who, by the way, is a classic exact opposite of the hero villain.
Yeah.
If you've decided that Superman's got to face down Lex Luthor at the end, Lex Luthor's going to be in his power armor.
Yeah.
With some kryptonite.
Right.
Right? But if you've decided not, then Superman can go into Lex Luthor's office and he says, you're now declaring bankruptcy. I've done a hostile takeover.
Superman wearing a power suit.
Power suit.
The analogy kind of broke down as I was going along, but I think you see the point.
Is that when Clark Kent puts a suit back on?
Yeah, I see. That here's, flies in through the
here's
window.
Here's the expose, Lex Luthor. Yeah. Or like or Sherlock Holmes and
Moriarty.
Are they going to fight at the end, or is it just going to be they're going to match wits, and all he has to do is foil Moriarty's latest plan, or are they going to have a little sword fight at the end? Because then if they're going to have a sword fight at the end, you're going to have to give Moriarty some sword fighting skills.
And, you know, actually that's the way that a lot of modern media has done, especially movies, where the hero doesn't destroy the bad guy in the end, he just destroys their abilities to do something, or destroys their support structure, because that leaves open the possibility of a sequel.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. Yeah.
And even more so for TV shows, right? We've got an ongoing thing, like,
right,
especially
yeah, yeah.
like kids' cartoons, stuff like, say, Inspector Gadget, right? At the end of every episode, he throws his plan, and Dr. Claw just flies away on his spaceship. Next time, Gadget.
Yeah.
Every single episode.
Or He-Man was even funnier because they would just run away. And it's like He-Man's like, oh, I'm a little tired. I don't think I could chase down Skeletor right now.
Yeah, he's right there. Nah, it's all right.
I'm sure he's not going to come back.
No! It's like, haven't you learned He-Man. The last 25 times he has come back?
Well, perhaps the most annoying one is Batman, though. Like, the Joker or whoever will kill, like, dozens of people.
Mm-hmm.
And Batman will catch him and just put him in Arkham
Asylum.
But that's
that's Batman's thing.
It's Batman's thing. But
have Batman build his own freaking prison.
Yeah.
The Bat prison. But it's just a stupid, like, story conceit to, like, allow the villains to continue surviving issue after issue.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, the point is he's not going to kill
which
the
is,
Joker.
Which is okay. Because
he'll never be that. But yeah, like, he probably should, like, just beat up the warden of Arkham Asylum. Why can't you make this impenetrable?
It's not like Batman's really that patient a guy. How many times does Commissioner Gordon have to say the Joker's escape before Batman just socks him?
Well, Commissioner Gordon or the Joker?
Yeah, it's not Commissioner Gordon's fault. But there, I mean, but in a Batman story, you've always got, he has to face down the main guy.
Right.
So there'll be some sort of fight, so you'll have got to give the Joker some tricks.
Right. Because
he's not going to be Batman's physical equal. But he has some tricks, or he has those henchmen where he can put up some sort of climactic battle.
I was going to say, kind of the opposite, right? Because, like, I'm just thinking, like, Batman is sometimes the physical inferior of the people he has to go up against.
Yeah, oftentimes.
I was just thinking, so that could be an interesting story where, you know, the
Penguin.
Well, I wasn't saying Penguin. But I'm just thinking, like, the players or the heroes know they're going to have to face down this guy, and that's kind of what, or that's where it's leading up to, and they know they physically can't beat him in a fight. So I think that could be a pretty interesting story where, you know, the players have to figure out a way to beat this guy.
Oh, well, that has to be part of any story. Mm. You can't have it where the players just never try to foil the villain, or you just don't have a story. Like, it's like, that's like hard.
Well, no, because you didn't get to the villain.
Yeah, well, there you go. There you have a story with no villain.
Yeah.
Can anyone think of a movie where the villain and the hero never meet?
No,
me neither.
No.
Viewers, if you know of such a movie, please make a post.
Oh, I'm sure there is. I'm
drawing a blank.
There might be some of those political ones, like with, you know, the U.S. versus the Soviet Union or something, where it's showing each president that they might never actually speak with each other. But I can't think of a specific example.
I don't know. Blade Runner keeps popping into my head, where there's that ambiguous ending where it seems that the Edward James Olmos character is going to hunt down Harrison Ford and Sean Young. Or Decker. Yeah. Because you got that origami.
But that's not the main thrust of the story, though.
No, I'm saying it's an ambiguous ending, so you don't know you don't see them facing down. But they've met, but you're not really sure that he's a villain. Yeah. Okay. But he has faced down Rutger Howard's character already.
What was it called? The Fifth Element. Yeah. I don't think...
Another bad movie.
I love that movie.
It's not bad.
I really love that movie.
It looks great. So story.
No, I don't think Bruce Willis's character ever actually meets the bad guy.
Yeah.
The giant evil moon?
No. Gary Oldman. Gary Oldman. Thank you.
I do know a name. Yeah.
It turns out it's Brad Pitt. But Okay.
Yeah, and then finally, like you already touched on that with sequels, is will the villain be recurring?
I think, definitely great to have some recurring villains, right, in some of your campaigns.
Because if he's going to be recurring, then that's going to help you answer whether or not the villain's going to face the heroes at the end. Mm-hmm. Or if the villain does, he's going to have like some sort of cheesy escape or be able to resurrect himself or break out of Arkham Asylum.
That's actually an interesting point to bring up there, is that if you have a villain that you plan to reoccur, actually, even if you have a villain at all, you should plan some kind of escape route for them, because the players could always outsmart you.
I'll say plan a logical escape route.
Or at least saying, like, make sure that it's realistic so he doesn't get a cheesy escape, because then people throw the bullshit card at you.
Yeah. I would say, yeah. Your villain should sort of follow the same rules that the players have to follow to escape.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
Why? Because a villain is a story device, whereas the players aren't.
Because you're creating the world, and as part of that world, you're creating the rules for it, so it has to be a logical and consistent place. Even if...
What if it's something that you just haven't told the... Let's say you have a story with psionics, and there's all these different powers, but you just haven't told them that there's a special psionic of teleporting.
If that's actually a part of the
and
world...
And then that escape is revealing to the players that teleport.
There you go. As long as it's a consistent set of rules that the villain has to follow, as well as the players, that's important.
What about in Halloween, where you have, like, Mike Myers just mysteriously gets up after he gets... Sorry to spoil that 30-40-year-old movie
people. Not a game.
Well, I would say
as no, but a player, I'm saying it's like
I would want
that mystery. Like, how did he just get up? Like, you turn around and the body's missing.
I'm talking kind of on what the DM or what the GM does versus what the players do. You can have him do something the players have no idea how it happened, but make sure that it still follows the same rules that the rest of the world has to follow. Don't just make something up on the spot. Well, if you have to, I suppose you have to, but.
Well, I was going to say, as a player, I would prefer to have some kind of at least tiny hint or like foreshadowing that this thing, that this escape could possibly happen. Otherwise, I might throw the bullshit cards.
You might feel that the game master is playing unfairly.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
okay, what if they kill the guy, and they see the dead body, and then they do whatever, they wrap up the story, right? No, usually players don't desecrate a body or desecrate a corpse.
Well, they will after where you're going, if that's what it is.
Yeah, and then next adventure they find out that it's the same villain. Mm-hmm. Do you think it's important then? I'm not saying that you should cheat. I'm just saying, do you think it's important that you have to then explain exactly how... Do you give the villain a monologue where he goes, yes, you thought I was dead, but actually I was dead, but I was resurrected and...
I don't think you have to. I think a lot of players would want that kind of understanding.
Why are you still alive?
Well, I see that as being very interesting because the players
might get frustrated if they don't know that. But if that's what you want to say, that's fine. All I'm saying is that you shouldn't cheat with it.
Yeah,
just put a little thought into it, right?
Yeah,
make it interesting, just don't make it too lazy.
Yeah, like the example is, you know, you're fighting someone on a roof. And then the guy's going to die, and all of a sudden, oh, he jumps into the balloon that was next to the tower, and you're like, hold on, how come we didn't see that before? And it's like, oh, well, that was always there. It's like, you didn't tell us. Don't you think our players would have seen, or our characters would have seen this giant balloon next to the tower? You know?
Exactly.
Yeah, I think I agree with Chris. Just don't cheat.
No one's arguing cheating, but I'm just saying there's certain things that you could do that are very common devices that would appear cheating at first blush.
Which is fine. Yeah. Also, though, I think if you look at it where there's something that the villain can do that's within the rules that the players are aware of, that could have an even better effect. It's like, oh, we didn't even think about the teleport spell.
Oh, he walked away.
Well, it's like, yeah, because he didn't lock the door.
He has legs. Oh!
He just got up from the wheelchair. That's always neat when you have the villain pretending to be...
Something they're not?
Something that they're not, yeah. Mm-hmm. Like Saw. I think the first Saw was a really good movie. Subsequent movie is pretty bad, but... And he's... Oh, well, I don't want to reveal anything. But it's new enough.
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
very good.
Yeah,
but the twist of the villain at the end is... I thought it was pretty clever.
Mm-hmm.
But you could also do it just a classic one. And this is not the Saw twist, but the person's in a wheelchair and then... They're like, oh, right, I can't wait to like push over that wheelchair and just start kicking that cripple. And then he stands up. Whoa! I guess you didn't suspect I had legs, Magneto.
I love the ending of The Big Lebowski, where the guy's actually in a wheelchair because he's crippled.
Yeah.
John Goodman's character.
You can actually walk!
I've never been more sure of anything in my life. He kicks it up the guy's pulse.
That'd be pretty funny again. You know, you set up this villain in the wheelchair, and the player's like, oh, I bet the GM's trying to throw us a fast one. So he's like, chuck him over. He's like, and he's actually in the wheelchair.
I love playing with cliches and stories.
He has no superpowers to speak of.
You, in fact, just crushed his head. You're covered in blood.
Not really related to, like, that specific example, but about playing with cliches. I watched Star Trek VI the other day, the one where they get sent to the Klingon prison planet place.
Oh, yeah, I like
that. Is that another country?
Undiscovered country.
Undiscovered country, yeah.
And
Shakespeare quoting Klingon is weird.
I think that's Christopher Plummer, right?
Yeah, it is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's a Shakespearean actor.
Speaking of him,
Canada's own.
I also watched The Insider the other day with Christopher Plummer.
Christopher Plummer, yeah.
I watched it because of that movie. I looked up, who is that guy playing General...
Christopher Plummer, really?
Christopher Plummer, Insider, and then I watched that. But anyway.
Sorry, was he in The Insider as well as Inside Man?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
He's the mini genre.
Yeah, that's right, he plays Mike Plummer. Wallace.
That's with the word inside.
Yeah, I was going to say there's a lot of inside.
He plays Mike Wallace in The Insider, and he plays a financier? Or some rich guy in Inside Man.
Anyway,
I'm dying to hear this cliche.
Please. You're the only one around. They're about to, that is, Kirk and Bones are about to get teleported off the planet onto the Enterprise. And also at the same time, the Klingon prison guard is about to kill them. They want to kill you guys. And they're like, why? What's this whole plan about? What are you doing? Well, since you're about to die, I might as well tell you. He starts telling them and they get transported back to the Enterprise. Yeah. Oh, my God, you waited 10 more seconds. I thought that was an interesting cliche about the villain revealing his plans and monologuing. It's pretty cool. Very cool.
I like the classic one. It's in Goldfinger. Bond goes, you expect me to believe that? No, Mr. Bond, I expect you to die. Best line ever.
Yeah. Like, do you expect me to talk?
Oh, is that what he says?
Yeah, he's on the machine.
Oh, I'm confusing that with XKCD.
There's a guy, Do you expect me to calculate multiple frames of reference while I'm strapped to the machine? No, Mr. Bond, I expect you to die.
Ooh. Yeah, but Bond's good for some
cliches.
Yeah, okay. Villain
since
cliches.
We're on the topic of villains. Who's your favorite Bond villain? Ooh,
Bond villain? I'm not a big Bond fan. Yeah. Favorite villain? I don't know.
What's yours?
Well, you know,
maybe Goldfinger because he had that cool line.
No. Goldfinger. Yeah.
Although he had a very weird plan of irradiating all the gold, and he would have all the. He was buying gold, and then he was going to irradiate Fort Knox, so it was going to drive the price of gold up.
Yeah, that was convoluted.
It was a real convoluted plan. Instead of just, why don't you just buy all the gold and then manipulate the gold market.
Yeah. Or you steal all the gold like any self-respecting villain.
Spectre was good because of the cat.
But he's one of those guys who we mentioned earlier who kills his own henchmen just to show how evil he is. And it just shows how dumb he is. Yay, I just made myself a little bit weaker. I could have killed you pretty easily, but instead I just killed my workers sitting next to you so that you can live to destroy my empire.
Yeah, you gotta wonder what those henchmen is like. You know, I really need to get another job.
Yeah.
But my favorite villain was the one from GoldenEye, Sean Bean.
Sean Bean. I was thinking about that one, actually.
Exactly. He's very, he used to be a 00 agent, and then he was left to die, and then he hates
prison. So you could say he's
a complex character. I'd say complex. He was pretty evil, so I didn't feel much sympathy for him.
Yeah, but I think a villain could still be pretty evil and still afford to be sympathetic.
Oh, can you think of an example?
Off the top of my head, no.
Okay, come back to us if you think of an example.
Magento, the one you said. Magento.
Magento, what's your power? I have the power of red ink.
There's this new shopping software that we're installing. For the longest time, I kept calling it Magneto, but the name is Magento, and I finally got myself saying Magento now, but no.
Yeah. Now you gotta say Magneto.
I have the power over red. The power over copier ink. Magneto?
Magneto.
Excuse me.
Sympathetic villain.
But is he like really super evil, though?
It depends.
Well, does start the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants.
Comics are difficult.
Depends on what you define as evil, though. Like, is it doing evil things or being evil?
No, but I think comics are difficult because of just the continuity. And, like, you know, one writer's run on it, they make them very evil. And another writer's run, it's... Like, for Magneto, they have to retcon it. Like, he killed all these, like, children or something like that. And then they retconned it, and people were like, why'd you do that? And Marvel Comics was like, we thought there was a place in the Marvel Universe for a Magneto who didn't kill children. Basically, they disagree with what the writer did with the character.
I see.
So you could actually like pull, you know, things out of his story and say, like, this guy is the most vile villain around. Mm-hmm. And then you pull other examples where you say, oh, he's very sympathetic, but it's just because different writers have done stuff with the character. And
there's one that you brought up. I know you just said comic books aren't the best example, but there's one you said before... Mr. Freeze. Wait, you liked
him. Yeah, I don't know if I would qualify Mr. Freeze as, like, really super evil.
Actually...
Does he freeze people?
Yeah, he actually does.
Know, here's the thing. Yeah. Evil, like, killing...
That's pretty
sad. A lot of villains kill people, but then it's like...
So do a lot of heroes.
Right, so do a lot of heroes. But we seem to have say, if you kill this, or kill in this way, then that makes you more evil than others. But then you're like, I don't know, yeah.
Mm. No, that makes sense, and we do that in our own society.
Yeah.
You lock up a person who does bad things in a small room for the rest of his life.
I'm saying if a villain kills like an adult male as opposed to like
a child.
A female child,
you
right?
See a difference between those?
Or even in the way they kill them and stuff like that.
I think it's a huge...
But you could say, like, anybody who kills is evil, so then... So as far as when you're looking for an evil villain who's sympathetic, you can pick any of the villains that have killed somebody, which I'm sure is just about everyone.
Yeah.
Every comic book villain has probably killed somebody. Mm. You can find examples, especially during the modern age of comics, or the Iron Age, where they got all dark and paramilitary.
Yeah. Mm.
I think probably the best way to make an evil villain sympathetic would be to show how or why he became evil and showing that it was due to events beyond his control.
Yep.
Abusive parent or what have you. And even though he ended up becoming evil.
Well, is Norman Bates sympathetic?
But is Norman Bates evil? I'd say he's just completely crazy and
Okay. So that's a very legalistic argument in that...
But when you say somebody's crazy, like if they're crazy and doing terrible things, doesn't that kind of make them a villain?
Well, yeah, it does,
villain,
but I...
Yes, evil
no.
Yeah, because otherwise we wouldn't have the insanity plea.
Well, that's what I'm saying. But then you're like, Mike Myers, like the psychiatrist, like, I've never met a kid who is pure evil. Like, I forget the exact quote, but basically he's like, there's no rhyme or reason for why he did what he did. He's just an evil being, an evil person. But then you're like, wow, he's crazy, you know? Like, he's in a psych ward.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think when it comes down to, because you could say people that just kill can be crazy because they're doing something that's so abhorrent. Somebody who commits incest, are they crazy? I mean, that's such a taboo, a societal taboo. So, like, someone who abuses their child, that rapes their, like, they're underage child.
They were nurses. I thought they were nurses.
But I mean, that is so...
3 for 3.
Why isn't that person crazy?
Mm.
But we just tag that person as evil. But you're like, who wants to have sex with a 5-year-old child? Like to have those urges is different than a normal person. Right? But why aren't we saying that person's crazy and therefore not evil?
Yeah, and if you even know that what we said before about the simple... I mean, like the Godzilla, you know, is Godzilla evil?
That's just like a force in nature.
Exactly, yeah. For that.
Well, it's kind of different than raping a child.
But that's what I'm saying. Like,
no, sorry. I was like, what I'm getting is, sorry, maybe I should finish my point. As I was giving you guys all a moment to ponder that.
You're basically saying evil is a type of insanity.
I think as far as a story goes, that you should just make insane, if it's insane and they're doing evil acts, they're evil. I think, you could argue, he's not responsible for his actions. I mean, maybe he's sympathetic, right?
I think there's a difference between, like being evil and doing evil actions and having a split personality disorder. So that's a different kind of...
Well, if they're on medication and stuff like that. I mean, that's real life. I'm talking about in a story, and you're like, oh, he didn't take his meds. Stop it. Stop beating him up. His bipolar medication is over there. Quick, grab it.
I'm really enjoying how every time you give an example about an evil person, you pointed to Wayne.
Yeah, I know. I was gonna bring that up.
I'm not pointing Wayne.
Yeah, for the last example.
No, this was me holding back
the
other hero.
He's crazy.
No, I was holding back because Wayne was beating up the guy who was off his meds.
I'm the evil crazy one.
No, you were the hero beating up the guy off his meds.
Sure.
I'd like to close this out of the discussion, with a quote from Satan on South Park saying, what is evil anyway? Is there reason to the rhyme? Without evil, there could be no good, so it must be good to be evil sometimes.
Just get me there for a second until I heard that from South Park qualifier. I was like, oh boy, where is this going?
Oh, that could be an interesting monologue in that, why am I doing this? Because I have to.
That movie, Shyamalan, Unbreakable.
Yes.
The villain wanted to create a hero. The world needs heroes.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, there is, that's a sympathetic character.
Yeah, terrible movie, but
there you go.
Villain, yeah.
Oh, I wouldn't say it's a terrible movie.
Yeah, it was okay.
Really? I called it unbearable after.
Have we agreed on any movie in this episode? It's like, we're usually split. Like, that was awesome.
Any movie that has to end with, like,
call me Mr. Glass, and that's a good ending.
Like, with the writing at the end saying, like, he ended up getting arrested or whatever. You know, those few lines of...
Are you saying American Graffiti is not a good movie?
So
it ends
House
with, like, stuff.
Terrible movie.
Yeah, Animal House. Yeah.
I don't know any those movies.
I think American Graffiti was one of the first movies, if not the first movie, where they show, like, what happens to the people in the future.
Yeah. But this isn't the future. This is, like, right at the end of the movie, like, instead of showing him, like, the guy getting arrested or whatever, it was just, like, text on the screen. And he's like, yeah, and then he gets arrested.
Well, I mean, they thought the movie went on too long.
Oh, but I like the end. They call me Mr. Glass. They call me Mr. Glass. Fine. Yeah, so he probably did that so they could have that as the ending. I think he's made some bad movies, but I think that kind of started with Signs, not Unbreakable.
Oh, yeah, I definitely love the movies.
Yeah, I actually enjoyed Signs.
Really?
My point, we haven't agreed about a single movie at all episode.
You invade a world covered in water, and that's the thing that kills you?
Water in the area.
How about let's invade that acid planet? Oh, okay. I hope nobody bothers to throw acid. You know, it rains acid. That's fine.
It took that long to figure it out.
Yeah, right.
I saw something funny online. It was and an it's article
like,
about...
Should we wear protective clothes? No, let's just walk around naked. Like we always do. We always do.
It's kind of weird because I was saying before that Push was okay because the ending wasn't very good, but Signs is the exact opposite. I agree, the ending sucks, but I enjoyed the movie up until then.
So. Oh, keep swinging. Tell him to keep swinging. What, he's going to swing at a freaking fish tank?
Yes. Like I said, I agree that was stupid.
However, why didn't she say, throw water at them, throw water at them?
You tell him it's like, water kills the alien. You just tell him, water kills the alien.
This guy was crazy.
Yeah, like we needed to, like he needed to have a baseball bat. Like I need to have a failed baseball career to be able to swing this baseball bat. I need that subtext.
Right. I like how the aliens were kind of small and skinny, and he had a baseball bat.
It's been that hard. We've got a report: baseball bats killed these guys.
Swing free, motherfucker! Swing free.
Is it the wood? Oh, maybe. Why did they invade a planet with so much wood?
And then secondarily, you died in an IKEA store.
You notice I noticed the corpses dissolve in the water. Wow, who cares? We've got the solution with these baseball bats. That's just gravy. I think gravy kills them too. It's got water.
Hit them with gravy ladles.
Anything works on these.
Sorry, listeners, it's very hot in this room, and the longer this podcast goes on, just the sillier we get. There's a lack of oxygen thing too with all the windows shut.
All right, maybe we should wrap it up.
Yeah, that's probably a good point.
One more thing, like, if the aliens came to this room, they would just die. Just like flick some sweat on them.
The humidity. Yeah. Japan, mysteriously, has not been invaded. I did like the village, though. Yeah. A lot of people didn't like that, but I did like the village.
Just by that stage, I was just waiting for the twist ending. So I just started thinking about it the whole time. What's the twist? What's the twist? And about 30 minutes into it, I think I guessed it.
Oh, really?
No. Which twist?
That it was a priest.
Sorry. Did you get the first twist or the second twist?
Which were you referring to?
About the
big...
thing in the real...
Okay. I got you. That was the second twist.
Yeah, okay.
I think people can... I don't know. Anybody who wanted to watch the village has seen it. Yeah. All right, so...
And should.
Anyway, yeah. As long as they don't watch, there will be blood.
And they'll be missing out.
They'll be happy.
Wow, talk about like mirror images and foils. Remember, like, sort of the opposite.
Yeah.
Before the podcast, I thought you said it was me. All right.
So, basically, when making a villain, just ask yourself a few questions. Who or what is your villain? Why is your villain opposed to the heroes? Or vice versa, now that there's the flip of the reactive heroes. Will all the obstacles in your story be related to the villain? And how can the heroes beat the villain? Will they even face the villain? Or do they need to face the villain? And will the villain be recurring? And I think if you get answers, whatever those are, I think you're going to come up with a pretty engaging villain that the heroes are really going to enjoy. So,
yeah. Thank you very much for joining us again on Edward Hands. Check us out online, www.idlereverhands.com. Post on the forum, like us on Facebook, and all that other good stuff. See ya.
Later.
Bye.
Idle Red Hands, recorded in Kobe, Japan. See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.